WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. Legalizing drugs is an appalling thought to many people. But this week, two national magazines are featuring cover stories presenting arguments in favor of it. The latest issue of National Review, the longstanding conservative magazine edited by William F. Buckley, says the war on drugs is lost. And New York Magazine has a cover story titled, Drugs Are Bad, The War on Drugs is Worse. National Review's editors write that although the magazine has long published analyses of the drug problem, up until now it's refrained from offering a formal opinion on legalization. With this issue, however, it's come out with a stand in favor of some movement towards legalization and offers essays by leading advocates of the idea, one of whom, Ethan Nadelman, we'll hear from later on in today's show. We'll also speak with Joseph Califano, the president of the Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University, a vocal opponent of legalizing drugs. But first, my guest is Richard Burkheiser, a senior editor at National Review and a columnist for the New York Observer. He's also the author of the new book, Founding Father, Rediscovering George Washington. I asked Richard Burkheiser why National Review has chosen this moment in time to come out with a formal position on legalizing drugs.
The vectors of all our analysis was pointing in this direction, and so we might as well come to the conclusion. And of course, also as time goes on, we're 10 years into the war on drugs under that name, and the bad consequences accumulate. So it becomes more necessary to take a stand.
Well, some people argue that crime is going down in major cities all over the country, and that the addict population is not growing, that we're not losing the war. How do you counter?
Well, in two ways. I think the good effects that the war is seeking to have are pretty small, are marginal. The use of certain drugs is going down. Marijuana and cocaine use has been declining for a long time, but that decline started before the war on drugs began. So it's hard to see how our efforts have produced it. On the other hand, the secondary bad effects are still there, and they're really not things we ought to live with. There is the violence in the cities, which is still much worse than it was, say, 30 years ago, even though lately the rates have taken a downturn. There is still the crowding of drug cases on the dockets of our courts and the crowding of prison cells with drug offenders. We still have problems with corruption because the enormous profits that come to drug pushers and to the drug industry, a part of that is siphoned off to policemen and judges and bankers in order to lubricate the thing, and that is still with us. And then finally, the psychology of the war on drugs has spilled over into regular medicine. Terminally ill patients cannot get the pain medication they need because doctors are afraid they'll become addicted, which is ludicrous, but that is the way people think in hospitals. And illegal drugs, which can help people with a variety of medical conditions, are unavailable. And there's no steps on the part of the government to test them or to rethink its position. And the classic example there, and this is where I come into this personally, is marijuana, which seems to have good effects for a variety of ailments or the symptoms of the ailments, AIDS, chemotherapy, glaucoma, multiple sclerosis. And I myself had cancer 1992, and I had to undergo chemotherapy, and it's all done and it's over. But chemotherapy makes you very nauseous, and the drugs they give you for nausea, the legal drugs, are good, but they only work up to a point. And past that point, the only effective thing was marijuana. So I had to become a criminal in order to get it.
How would you say then that the conservatives now coming out in favor of some kind of debate on the legalization of drugs are redefining the debate? Are they reframing it, taking it away from issues of being tough on crime, the rhetoric of the war on crime?
Well, look, I believe on being tough on crime. And, you know, I know Bill Buckley does, National Review does. I also don't see this as a libertarian versus social conservative issue. I'm a social conservative. You know, I support the Christian Coalition and the Moral Majority before it, and I think they were a force for good in politics. But you can't fight crime effectively if you're going after crimes that are going to be impossible to eradicate, and if your pursuit of them leads to tremendous police corruption. You can't think seriously about morality if you are pursuing vices, again, which the state has no capacity effectively to pursue.
My guest is Richard Brookhiser. He's a senior editor at National Review and a columnist for the New York Observer. We're talking about drug legalization and the rise among some conservatives who support some measures of legalization. William Buckley argues in favor of legalization from the libertarian perspective, that drug use is a matter of personal responsibility and that more people die every year as a result of the war against drugs, drug gang warfare, street crime, adulterated black market drugs, than die from overdoses. But if drugs were legalized, wouldn't more people start overdosing as more people and children gain much greater access to dangerous and highly addictive drugs?
Well, look, they would still be illegal for children. No one is recommending that. But yes, more people would take them. And inevitably, more people, more children would get them than now do. However, the increase would not be nearly as significant as what the proponents of the drug war tell you it is. I mean, they toss around figures such as that cocaine use would go up to 30 million or even 60 million. It's now, according to the government's own figures, it's 3 million people use it and 500,000 people use it once a week or more. So that is an enormous increase that they're forecasting. The last model we had of an end of prohibition was alcohol in 1933, and alcohol use went up 25%. Now, you know, to go from 3 million to 30 million or 60 million, you're talking about 1,000% or 2,000%, and 25% is much less than that. So yes, you would get an increase in drug use. This is not without cost, and there are going to be lives lost along the way, and blighted along the way. But they're being blighted now already, and the increase in them would be, although you know every individual life is significant, it's not going to be the kind of thing that the Drug Enforcement Agency or other people would tell you.
So how do you explain the seeming contradictions in the openness of many in the conservative ranks to even talking about the idea of legalizing drugs?
Well, there might be, I think there are two things. First of all, we say we don't like bureaucracies, and for the most part, we really don't, especially big ones that are not doing their job and that are causing a lot of problems in the course of not doing it. And the drug bureaucracies, when you think about them, they turn out to be a classic example of this. So that goes against the conservative grain there. I think another parallel that's very striking to me is the parallel with gun control. I mean, when liberals say that guns are magical, malign objects, which of themselves compel people to shoot them off and commit crimes and murders and so on, conservatives can see through that. Okay, they resist calls to gun control based on those sorts of arguments. Now, of course, the anti-drug arguments are exactly the same thing, and we fall for that. But I think maybe it is trickling, maybe it is becoming evident to some conservatives that there's a parallel in these lines of arguing, and that we shouldn't buy the argument as it relates to drugs, which we reject as it relates to guns.
A lot of money has been spent, obviously, on the war on drugs. Would you say that you would invert that equation to spend as much money as we spend on the war and invest it into public health policies to lessen addiction? And how would that go over among conservatives? How would that go over politically?
Well, look, it goes over if you look at all the money that's being spent. I mean, the money that's being spent on the war on drugs is not just the budgets of the Drug Enforcement Agency. There is a lot of money that goes into policing, a vast amount of the resources that go into policing and into prison building, which is directly tied to the war on drugs and which could be, you know, productively shifted to other kinds of policing. And that would be a tremendous gain. So, you might look at the bottom line and see, well, yes, the public health spending would go up because we might decide to prescribe heroin to addicts, and that costs money. But the other side of the ledger is much more than the amount you'll be saving on specific drug-related agencies. And so I think it's a good trade-off.
Right now we have mandatory minimum sentencing for drug use and drug dealing. What changes do you recommend in the criminal justice system?
Well, mandatory sentencing seems to be a bad idea. One of our contributors is Robert Sweet, who is a district judge serving here in New York, and that was the turning point for him when he decided that the war on drugs was a mistake, when he found himself handing out very stiff minimum sentences for first-time offenders and for minor offenders. And one effect of this is that we are filling up our prisons with drug offenders at a time when we're straining to add new cells to hold criminals who should be there, who ought to be put away. But we have trouble doing it because there are so many drug offenders taking up the space. So that is something that has to be rethought.
What models do you all of the National Review want your readers to walk away with in their mind? Models of a different take on the war on drugs, not a war, but a public health policy war, which is what Mayor Kurt Schmoke has called for. What models do you want people to look to? Or are we looking to Europe?
Well, we're looking to certain things that some European countries are doing. The ways heroin addiction is treated in perhaps in England or the way they're experimenting with it in Switzerland is something we have to look at, and we have to see how it's worked. This is an experiment. We can look at the results. We can look at some of our needle exchange programs here in this country. Baltimore has one. And if indeed, you know, AIDS rates go down as a result of this, well, then we consider that as a successful thing to do at the margin. We don't do it now because there's such a hue and cry. It's thought that needle exchanges or allowing needles to be sold would be pro-drug, so it doesn't get done. I think the basic thing, the primary thing we'd like our readers to walk away with is the notion that the war psychology is the wrong model for doing this. And William James coined the phrase about the moral equivalent of war, but that was a real bad phrase because there aren't moral equivalents of war. A war is a war, and when you fight it, you're fighting an enemy of your country's freedom or of its vital national interest, and you're willing to pull out almost all the stops. But short of that, you shouldn't be talking about wars and the language of wars.
Richard Brookhiser, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Richard Brookhiser is a senior editor at National Review. This is Fresh Air.